And thanks also to Kathleen Stevenson, the KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director. And I want to also thank everyone who's participated in this... What you could call it is direct action, or perhaps indirect action. We do have an effect, what we've been doing for years and years. The landscape of radio and media in general has changed entirely. KBOO is still here, and we still continue to morph and change and try to and keep ahead of the curve. The number to call to be part of that is 1-877-500-5266. And hey, everybody, this is an impromptu contest, which I didn't have a chance to run past the powers that be. But I'll toss $250 into the pot if you can guess how many Superfund sites we really have in Oregon. We think about the Willamette River, and it's come to our, you know, of course, it's certainly come to the attention of more than just the activist community recently with the threat of oil spills and possible coal ash events happening in our river systems. So what do you think? It's worse than you think, by the way, just a hint. The rest of the headlines, before we get into that, of course, always, always get the facts, know your rights, take a stand. And powerful members of the Washington State Senate are on board. They've cooked up a plan to tax crude oil shipped into the state by rail. The idea is they're going to raise a little money in case of an oil spill. Seems like they may already know something that we don't know, or perhaps they're going to use the money to just dump it in the river and soak up the oil. Because in the end, there's no amount of money that can protect the environment once we've passed that critical tipping point and systems begin to collapse en masse. So go ahead, tax away, powerful members of the Washington State Senate, and we can always just dump it in the river. The Paramount Petroleum Asphalt Plant was recently sold to an investment firm and leased to ARC Logistics Partners, LP. As this is the idea to use it as a crude oil terminal. What the hell? It's so polluted anyway, is the general philosophy. ARC Terminals, the operating subsidiary, runs 17 facilities throughout the country. Federal data show one-third of those facilities have been found out to be not in compliance with EPA regulations over the last few years. So what the hell? Another Superfund site to add to the list. And by the way, I do have that list, and I'd be very happy to share that with any listeners. But do call that number, 1-877-500-5266, and let's hear how many sites you think we actually have. Ever wondered just how well our great state of Oregon is doing on the Superfund site? Well, just take a look. Oregon's legal aid groups are hoping that a bill passed the Oregon House on Monday will help them serve the fast expanding. This is such a grim story. This is one that raises your hackles going through it point by point. So we don't have enough public defenders, and so there's a bill that we're going to have more public defenders because of the fast expanding ranks of Oregon's poor. And when they say poor, they mean either currently incarcerated, previously incarcerated, or due to be incarcerated any minute. Because privately operated prisons have made it clear that they need raw material to keep their shareholders happy. And you know who the raw material is, right? So we learned this week that the National Security Agency's British counterpart monitored internet users who visited the WikiLeaks website, and that the Obama administration urged allies to file charges against WikiLeaks and Julian Assange. So, yeah, Edward Snowden, now is not a good time to come home, right? As the phrase goes, you can't go home again. You certainly can't. Not if home is the good old US of A. And yesterday, with the whole world watching, a US sentenced Megan Rice, 84-year-old former nun, to nearly 3 years in prison for breaking into the Oak Ridge nuclear weapons complex in Tennessee and defacing a bunker holding bomb-grade uranium. The protesters were in there for something like 2 hours before anybody paid any attention. And this is a nuclear facility, right? So they had plenty of time to splash blood around, which they did. They defaced the bunker, holding the bomb-grade uranium. And the main thing, however, that the government was very exercised about was that it exposed serious security flaws. Well, duh. But the main flaw here is that we're storing the stuff in the first place. And a U.S. Border Patrol agent fatally shot a man yesterday after, this is near San Diego, after the agent, the person attempting to move to America through Iraq at the cop. More news from all over the place, but we've got right now Deborah Grisham Hernandez on with the Free Sunshine Week movement, and we're going to talk a little bit about that because it's coming up very soon. Good morning, Deborah. Thanks for being with us.
Well, good morning, Chris. I was listening to your uplifting news.
Many would call it a rant, actually.
Oh, I can understand that. You know, it's interesting. As we're talking about Sunshine Week, I was listening to all those different stories and thinking, well, that's why open government is important, because we need to know what's going on in private prisons. Well, that's what's important, NSA, obviously. We need to know what government is doing. Oak Ridge plant, gee, I wonder what the security and safety is at our nuke plants. Can people get access to those records? How many times has the Border Patrol shot people, you know, in the last year, in the last 6 months? It's just so interesting how these tentacles reach into all the very things you're talking about.
And this is only the stuff that gets through the monitors that actually makes its way to the mainstream news, which is heavily censored. Can you tell listeners about where they can go? Because Sunshine Week coming up in March, very important to be involved in this and to demand more openness and accountability. Mm-hmm. Let listeners know more about the website and what they can do to become involved.
You bet. Well, Sunshine Week, our website is sunshineweek, all one word, .org. And our goal is to get people talking about open government, to educate people, and this is not just about journalists. This is about everyday people. This is about students. This is about librarians, archivists, a whole swath of people, even lawmakers, to educate people about how to use open government, what you can get from it, the good that can come from it, and to let them know that it is your information.
And that website we're going to invite you back probably every week up until Sunshine Week. So give us the website right now if you could, because we're fresh out of time. It's membership drive and it's our last day too.
That's important. It's sunshineweek.org. And people can come there, find things, and of course, if they want to contribute, send us stuff, that would be fantastic.
Thank you so much for that. My guest has been Deborah Hernandez with the Sunshine Week movement, and now it's time to go and talk to our fellow volunteers, members, friends, and the membership room, because this really is it. We're down to the wire.
Thanks, Chris. This is Jenka. You're listening to KBOO Community Radio's Winter Membership Drive. Right now is the time to call 877-500-5266 to support KBOO. My name is Jenka. I'm here with Paul, and we're excited to be on with you on this last day of our Winter Membership Drive. So if you've been holding out, you've been waiting till the end, this is it. And we need your support right now. Think about all that Chris provides on a daily basis on Air Cascadia. You hear about Sunshine Week today. She's been on the forefront of the case of Chelsea Manning, has reported on the NSA, has had David Swanson on talking about drone warfare and many other topics, Monsanto and genetically modified foods, and of course the Lynn Stewart, the imprisoned lawyer who was recently released, and who brought you the exclusive interview with her husband, but Chris Andre. Support this type of programming, 877-500-5266. Call right now and double your money. Your contribution will be doubled by a generous contribution from John Pokola.
Yep, for another 15 minutes, in fact. You still have 15 minutes more to double your donation, 877-500-5266. 800-500-5266. We bring you public affairs every morning between 7 and noon. And we have a wide variety of volunteers, programs, points of view, themes, from talk radio to Democracy Now! To political perspectives to Air Cascadia. We've got the Old Mole Variety Hour on Monday. We've got all kinds of things. And we really do our best. And so we hope you will do your best. We don't expect any more, and we don't expect any less. 877-500-5266 is the number.
We all come together to make this happen. Now it's your chance to be a part of this here and make your experience in Portland increase. Make your impact increase by just giving $5 or $10 a month to KBOO. 877-500-5266. We still need to make that match. We want to thank Kim in Monroe, Oregon, Carrie in Portland, and Zale in Portland. Thank you so much. You can be the one we thank next. 877-500-5266.
You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. Today we are proud to bring to our listeners an encore broadcast of a recent interview we did with Academy Award-winning filmmaker Oliver Stone. In this interview, Dennis spoke with Stone about his documentary series on Showtime, The Untold History of the United States. Dennis begins by asking Oliver Stone the series' origins.
Well, in my film work, I've been going to historical subject matter quite often. I was interested in the big events of America's time. And over the years, I think I became, although I was born conservative and raised that way and schooled and everything, I did become more progressive as I experimented and as I talked to people. And I reached that place in 2008, having made some more than a dozen films, and I was exhausted by the idea of George Bush's 8 years in office. So I felt like rather than make another dramatic film, I really wanted to do one thing for my kids, would be to just look back at my life and see why, from the 1940s to now, what had changed, what was wrong, what had gone wrong. And Peter was an old friend. He'd been studying these issues for 30 years plus. He was a nuclear expert on arms. And we combined our forces, dramatist and historian, and we really went at it. From 1900 to now, it was a big deal, much bigger than we ever thought. It turned into a 5-year deal as opposed to a 2.5-year deal. We were over budget, over time. And the book came out of the series. In other words, once we'd started into the series, we realized that we were in pretty deep. So we wanted to substantiate what we were, some of the stuff we were saying with a book. And Peter and his graduate students really turned it on.
A lot of footnotes in there for people who love to...
You know, this stuff is radical, some of the stuff we're saying. We're attacking shibboleths. We're attacking this. We have to back it up.
Well, I know a lot of this material, but it was revelatory, and the way it was presented on screen was extraordinary. I want to talk to you about some of the content, and then I want to talk about the process and the way you worked, how it differs, I think, from some of the other documentarians working today. But I think the thing that surprised me the most was the whole story around Henry Wallace and the changing of the ticket under FDR. Could you talk a little bit about that? Was that revelatory for you?
Yes, it was, and Peter knew a lot about it. It was a special subject for him. But I must say that grew out of Peter's interest in the atomic bomb. You know, his main study has been that, and why he's written very effectively about why we did not have to drop the bomb on Japan. I mean, very sound argument, and you must see the series to understand it. But part of that chain of birth is the idea that Wallace, who was vice president from 41 to 45, early 45, was a true American progressive, not a liberal, with a New Deal vision of America, had cooperation with the Soviet Union as well as with all countries. He detested the British Empire, it's true, and he didn't have any friends in Churchill and so on. Over the course of the war years, it was apparent that he was progressive, and the Democratic bosses, who were very conservative, could not abide him, and they wanted to get rid of him, and they did at the 1944 convention. It was very fixed in those days, and they backed a nonentity called Harry Truman, who managed to squeak in. I think Wallace was about 5 feet from the Wallace's representative, Pepper, was 5 feet from the podium when the convention was closed the first night, when Wallace would have swept in. So it was a very sad moment. The other thing, of course, is that Roosevelt, if he'd lived, I don't think we would possibly have dropped the bomb on Japan. There was no need to. But we've been fed that myth over the years. It's been driven into our education system. It's repeated over and over again, and we are now let's say, disinformed people. But it's not really about Wallace. I mean, in a way, it's very kind of you to say it's a great story, but and it's potentially a great movie. But there's such a big story here about the atomic bomb and the use of our force over this last 70 years since World War II, what we became. That is the essence of the series.
And I do want to talk to you more about that. I know that you were in Japan with Peter Kuznick for the 60th commemoration of the bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And I'm wondering if this discussion came up, and if is there that knowledge there of the way in which the atomic bomb became sort of the opening salvo of the Cold War, as opposed to the end of World War II, if you will?
No, it's not there, but it was a very moving experience. It had many survivors, hipaksha, they call them in Japan, and in Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and we also went to Okinawa because of the bases are still there. There's many bases. They're building new bases there. We also went up to Jeju Island in South Korea, where the South Korean, and within Pentagon, of course, loving this, building the gigantic naval base, which is about 300-plus miles from Shanghai. So a lot's going on in the Asia. So that was where our journey was about. And when we talked to the Japanese, they never got this basic education, because the military authorities, the U.S. military authorities, controlled Japan after the war to censored everything about the atomic bomb. The word itself could not be used, atomic bomb, not until the